Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to this interview with Joanne Rawton-Arnold, visually impaired opera singer and co-founder of Formidability, Britain's first fully accessible opera company, focusing on their R&D opera project, The Bridge Between Breaths. The Bridge Between Breaths has been inspired by the felling of Colston statue, set in Bristol in the late 18th century as Pierre Jones mourns for his Caribbean beloved. The production is currently in rehearsals in the East End of London. A performance of The Bridge Between Breaths will be videoed and then streamed live via Zoom on Tuesday the 8th of September at 6pm to launch the Tête à Tête Festival. Full details on how to watch The Bridge Between Breaths and support the Formidability R&D Opera Project can be found by visiting the Tête à Tête website, tete-a-tete.org.uk. When I met up with Joanne via Zoom, we chatted about the background to The Bridge Between Breaths, where the powerful story of the opera had come from, its links to the current times that we are in at the moment, how Formidability is again breaking boundaries in access to opera by working with an artist to produce artwork live on stage while the opera is being performed, providing a bridge between sound and vision for deaf audiences, and what effect COVID-19 has had on the rehearsals for The Bridge Between Breaths. I also took this opportunity to chat with Joanne about her involvement and work with Daniel Pemberton on the soprano parts for his musical score and soundtrack to Rising Phoenix, the Netflix documentary about the rise and impact of the Paralympic Games. I began by first asking Joanne about how life in lockdown has been for her, her company Formidability, since we last chatted back in May.
It's been a whirlwind. It's just been mad. I've been far busier through this whole period than I ever expected to be. So at the moment, I'm feeling I'm juggling many balls in the air. Formidability's has this project on at the moment, which is coming to a head. So as ever in these things, things start slowly. And then as you work through the process and the weeks go by, gradually you have to start pedaling faster and faster to keep everything going. But I'm just delighted. We've got a wonderful team, and I'm just thrilled by the group of people who have joined me on this journey, to use a real cliche, and are helping me to make this project into something which I think is going to be really, really special.
And you're very busy at the moment, just about to go into rehearsals for The Bridge Between Breaths. And on reading the notes on the Formidability website about the piece, it sounds very powerful piece and very relevant for the times that we're in at the moment. Could you give me a little bit of background as to the development of the piece? And I think from reading the notes, it's set in Bristol in the mid-1700s at a very sort of interesting time for the city.
Yes. So back way, way back in, I think it was May, just after we'd got the funding from the Arts Council from their COVID fund, I approached Hafsa Anila Bashir, who's a fabulous poet, and said, we'd really like to commission you to write the libretto, the text, for a new opera, a small-scale opera. And we'd like it to be something that resonates with everything that we've all been going through during this very strange time of pandemic and lockdown. And the first conversation I had with her, she made this really beautiful comment where she said that she had this feeling that the earth was caught between the inhale and the exhale. And I thought, that is such a stunning way of putting the strange kind of hiatus that we've all been in. And obviously the parallels with the idea of breath and the obvious thing with COVID and what it does to your breath. Yeah. But just, it was a really beautiful idea. And then I let her have time and space to think. And she said, and I said to her, I didn't want it to be something obvious. The idea would be for two singers, probably a tenor and a soprano, and two instrumentalists, but I didn't want it to be something about two people in lockdown because that would be really boring. So she went away and she came back with the idea of writing a piece that was a series of unrelated vignettes that touched on different things that have been, different events that have been happening around the world and from different perspectives. And I thought, this is great. This is really interesting. And then we thought we would use one of those for our research and development focus in September, before she then would continue and work with Gareth Churchill, the composer, to before they would continue and write the rest of the opera. And then she sent me an email and said, you know, she was planning that the vignette she would use would be one about Colston's statue coming down in Bristol. And this was very soon after that had happened.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's amazing. And then she got thinking more, and she realized, no, that is the opera. So I thought, wow, this is phenomenal. This is opera being in, kind of turning on a post-it note and being so, so current and relevant. And it's such a huge and important topic that affects so many people. I was blown away by this idea. So she went away and she carried on thinking. And then, yes, she's come up with, it's going to be three acts. Mm-hmm. And the first act is set in Bristol in the 18th century. And it gives voice to a slave called Pero, who was brought to Bristol from Nevis. And there is a bridge in Bristol named after him. The title, The Bridge Between Breaths, was something that she came up with before she decided to make the focus of it, Colston's statue coming down and Pero and there being a bridge. But because she's talking about in some of the libretto for the opera, there's a lovely line about the between the chest bone and the heart is where we'll meet. And I decided this is this bridge between breaths. And I thought it was so beautiful. Then there is now this lovely extra layer with Pero's bridge. There's the obvious links as well, you know, with the terrible way that George Floyd was killed and breath being, being at the center of that. So I just feel as though we've got this, as you say, really powerful piece that I think is going to touch a lot of people. And I hope it's going to touch a lot of people who perhaps haven't experienced opera before. So then the other two acts are going to be bringing us, the audience, into the present day. And I think Kafsa's plan is to make the second act is when Colston's statue comes down. But this is all shifting sands. That could change, because our idea was that we'll see how the research and development goes, focusing on act one. And then she and Gareth, I'm sure, we're all going to learn things, but it could easily influence how they continue and complete the work, which is lovely to have the opportunity to work with a composer and the librettist on their work before they finished it. And then they go away and carry on writing and get influenced by what the artists involved found.
Like with many of Formidability's work, you are breaking boundaries again with Bridge Between Breaths, because you're having an artist on stage as well, who I think might be reacting to the piece as it's performed. What was the sort of reasoning for that, and why have an artist on stage? Sure, it's going to make things a little bit more tricky, perhaps.
Well, for a long time, I've been fascinated by the idea of how the possible intersectionality between visual art and music. And, you know, what got me thinking about this was there's a beautiful series of poems by Verlaine, which are describing art by, I think the artist Watteau, and they're the Fête Galante. And there are these beautiful pictures of kind of idealized pictures of people having a lovely time in a beautiful garden. And there are some of the characters from the Commedia dell'arte come along. And there's a lovely one called Mandolin. And talking about the way the mandolin sounds and the people and the clothes everyone's wearing. It's basically audio description, you know, it's of a painting. Yeah. It's what this poetry is. And several composers have set some or all of those poems to music. And I've always thought, wouldn't it be lovely to do a concert in an art gallery where you could sort of mix the music and the art linking? And then, anyway, I got thinking with our opera and thought, well, last year we merged sign dance with opera for the first time, and it was really successful. It was wonderful. And I thought, let's try something else, not because we don't want to do sign dance, but because we want to try other things and also be pushing boundaries. And I thought, well, what would happen if you got an artist in the theatre while the performance was happening? Because the director we worked with last year, Sarah Brody, made a really lovely comment when she was asked by someone, what is opera? And Sarah's response was, it's when a character feels an emotion that is so intense and so big that the only choice they have is to sing. And so I thought, that's brilliant. But if you can't access that wonderful world of sound that opera creates, and all of those big emotions, can we find another way? And so my question is, can an artist kind of translate that big emotion and energy in the music into brushstrokes and colour so that a deaf audience can pick up some of that really visceral excitement? that everyone's experiencing. And then, you know, but we, you know, we realize that, of course, that doesn't give a deaf audience a literal translation of what's happening on stage. They can't, they won't get text as you would with sign language. So we're looking at how you could combine that artwork with live, with captioning the text. And the idea that we've got is that can we project the artist's work in real time, live onto a big screen as she works. So you see it created in real time, not just she's sitting there painting and then suddenly you see the finished work, but you see it being made. And if we can find a way to blend in the captioning somehow electronically, and this is not my field, so we're going to have to, that's not my, my expertise at all, but that that's the idea. Can we find a way, get a captioner to be really creative and have programmed in the text so that it kind of looks the way it sounds in some way? That's something that'll take quite a bit of planning and thinking about, but that's kind of in my mind, so that we wouldn't need to use an interpreter, a sign interpreter during the show, because you could have the captioning. So yeah, we're going to see what we can do, how much of that we can manage, but the long-term plan would be to then really try and put that in solidly and creatively as we plan the full production.
Where can people see and experience Bridge Between Breaths and also support the R&D project?
What they can do is to go to the Tete a Tete website, and the website is tete-r-tete.org.uk. So Tete spelled T-E-T-E hyphen letter A hyphen tete.org.uk. And on that website, there is all the listings for the festival. You can also just search The Bridge Between Breaths and Tete a Tete, and that'll take you to our webpage, which has some information about the show and a link to book tickets, because the way it's going to work is that Tete a Tete have been working incredibly hard for months to make this festival happen amidst all the changing, shifting sands with COVID, and are we allowed to perform? Are we not allowed to perform? Can we be indoors? Can we not be indoors? How much social distancing? All of that has been a huge, huge thing to deal with. And I just take my hat over off to those wonderful people who've just done an incredible job. The Tete a Tete Festival is happening in September at the Cockpit Theatre in London. And there are, I think it's 22 shows that are giving live performances in the cockpit to socially distanced audiences. And each show will be broadcast online in a digital, interactive online version. 10 shows, which includes us, are going to be entirely digital. So as we're sort of R&D, we're not research and development, and we're not producing the finished, complete opera. What we're going to do is we're going to be filming our act one. We're going to have some little interviews with members of the cast and the creative team and a small number of guests that we're hoping to be able to get in just to see what we've done during the week and have a chat about how the accessibility is working for deaf audiences. And then that film will be broadcast on the 8th of September at 6 p.m., which will kick off the Tete a Tete season at the Cockpit Theatre.
Wow.
So you go to the Tete a Tete website, you find The Bridge Between Breaths, and you click on the Book Now button, and you'll pay a tiny, tiny amount for a ticket to join our online broadcast. I think they're setting it at about £1, so it really is tiny.
But people are not obviously donate if they want, kind of thing.
Yes, that's the idea. So you'll pay your pound, then you can join us online in this kind of live watch party via Zoom on the 8th of September at 6 p.m. We'll and following the film, we'll have a chance to talk to people who are watching. We'll have a Q&A with interactive online in real time. And we'll be really interested to hear people's ideas and answer questions about our process and our approach to accessibility. And then that broadcast, it will still be available to watch for 28 days after that. Yeah, so that's the plan. And then we will be giving people an opportunity to give us some donations should they feel like they're moved by what we're doing and love our work and want to help us to create the full productions. Anything we raise during this film will go towards the full production costs and will really help to support our fundraising campaigns.
Have you started to think about how you're going to take things forward from the R&D, what might happen next year for the full production?
I haven't had any like particularly concrete thoughts. I've got ideas about places, about people I'd like to talk to about the possibility of where we might perform it. I think it's the kind of work that needs to be seen in not just London. It really needs to go to Bristol. Yes. Very much so. And so I need to explore and approach some venues and see, and you know, we've all got the uncertainty with COVID hanging over us and how we have to plan around that. But you know, I think we're all learning a lot about how we can manage to perform and to have an audience and so on. And I think everyone is so keen to get back to some kind of live performance that we need to be seeing if we can be part of that. And then just we'll take the ideas and everything we learned during the R&D and then make that bigger and better for the full production. And of course, that one of the key parts, things that we'll be adding, will be live audio description.
Has all the sort of COVID-ness, as one might say, caused real headaches for you? Because I think you're having to hire a space which is probably two or three times the size of the space you would have liked to have hired for rehearsals. Yeah. I mean, has it put a real strain on things?
It's been a challenge. You know, I think because, you know, we're all learning as we go, and I had sort of based plans for this workshop on the way things had worked before COVID. And then you started thinking, oh, yes, of course, because we have to be two meters, or, well, in the case of the singers, we are keeping ourselves 3 meters from each other to be super safe, even though we know legally we are now allowed to be 2 meters from others. We're just, yeah, being really careful. But, you know, if you're going to have a team of 11 in the room and everybody needs to be social distanced, you suddenly find you need a rather larger space than you had would normally need, which, of course, costs quite a bit more money. But we're really happy to be going to be where we are. We're going to be working at the Toynbee Studios in London in their theatre, which is lovely. It means that we're actually going to be working on a stage rather than just all a flat sort of hall, and which is nice, and also a nice setting for the film. We've had to be super careful and really plan things and think in a different way. And you suddenly think, oh, you know, little things like, it would be normal in a theatre company for the company to provide refreshments for the breaks, like in terms of tea, coffee and biscuits. We can't do that because of COVID safety. Mm. So you suddenly have to think of all these little things like that, that you've got to change. So I've got an absolutely fantastic co-producer who we lost without. I'm really, really happy that she's joined us. And she's come up with this great plan that because we're in the theatre and you've got stalls or seating, that means she can label seats that are socially distanced for every member of the company. So this is where you go. This is where you put your belongings. This is how you keep safe. And that's just great. So, yeah, there's been a lot of reading of health and safety guidelines and creating a risk assessment, all of that kind of tedious but very important stuff that we've got to deal with. And, you know, I mean, and the things that you wouldn't necessarily expect it to be buying, and therefore but of course we are. So we've got all our, we've got masks and we've got visors to try to see if singers can work in a visor rather than singing in a mask would be very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But we can try with a visor and hope it doesn't fog up and see what happens. you know, but all that, yeah, I bought one of those temperature guns that you point at people's foreheads. So we will be aiming that at everybody as they arrive and doing everything we can to ensure that we're all as safe as possible.
We must talk about your involvement in the Rising Phoenix, the Netflix documentary about the history and impact of the Paralympic Games. You sang the soprano score on Daniel Pemberton's soundtrack for the documentary. How did this come about and what was it like working with Daniel?
Well, it was a complete surprise, a total bolt out of the blue. I was here at home, of course, in lockdown, and I was in my lunch break between pupils that I was teaching online via Zoom. And then the phone rang and it was a call from a production company saying that they were working on this film and that they needed someone with my skill set. Would I be interested? And I was kind of completely gobsmacked and totally surprised because, you know, it's not every day that someone phones you up and says, would you like to sing on a film soundtrack for Netflix? you know, you're thinking, hang on, is this a wind up? And so I said, yeah, of course I'd be interested in exploring this. And so they sent my material across to Daniel to listen to. And then I put it to the back of my mind, because I thought, in this profession, if you start to hope that things that are a maybe become real, if you start to count on it too soon, then you're often disappointed. So you have to kind of keep calm and just not let yourself get carried away. So I just carried on doing my work, and then I heard that Daniel liked what he heard and they wanted me, and so okay, this seems to be happening. And then they sent me Daniel sent me the music he wanted me to sing, and some clips of the scenes that it would go with, so I could watch and get an idea. And then I tried it all out, and he was such a lovely guy, really, really lovely, and very accommodating. And his assistant sent me through GarageBand files.
Yeah.
So that I could then listen to the whole score, or you could take out certain tracks and just listen to, like, the vocal line was going in parallel with the violin line, so I could just listen to the violin line if I wanted to. Or I mean, I learnt my part separately from the musical score he sent me, as I always do, just go to my piano and work my way through it. But when it came to actually recording, what was really, this was completely a whole new world for me, and very unusual, in that because of COVID, we couldn't go and be in a studio together. So I had to transform my little music room at home into a makeshift recording studio.
Gosh.
And I'm so glad that I bought a good microphone. Just literally the day lockdown started, I had gone and bought a microphone, a good mic, so that I could use, which I could use in my teaching. But my brother-in-law is a real techie. He's great. So he came along and loaned me a kind of a shield to go around the microphone that would absorb some of the echo in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that the recordings would be really dry, which is what Daniel would need. And so I set everything up with all of this, and threw an old blanket across the floor to dull the, yep, the echo from that, and found the bit of the floor that doesn't creak when you stand on it. You know, really crucial. And then I put my headphones on so that I could listen to the tracks and learn where my entries were, because I didn't have a musical score, a full score. I only had the violin line that I was singing on paper in front of me, or on my iPad in front of me. So I couldn't, I knew how many bars rest I had, but I didn't know what was happening just before I would have to sing each time. And in terms of being written down, so I had to listen and learn what instrument I would hear just before I had to sing, and where I was going to get my pitch from, so I would sing the right note. You know, so I that's how I worked. I listened. I would record a bit. I would listen back. Think, was it any good? I would, and you could save each version, so I could send Daniel multiple takes, all saved in the same file, and then he could take his pick and mix and match and edit things together as he wanted to.
Wow. What an experience.
It was a quite an experience, yeah.
Have you seen the documentary yet? Have you listened to yourself?
I have. The first time I got to hear it was actually the day it was released. I didn't realise that the whole soundtrack was also being released on all the major platforms, so the album is available. And I was listening through, thinking, I don't know where he's put me. I knew I was in it, but because I had a lovely email from one of the directors, but I didn't know where exactly. In terms of the tracks that on the sound that were on the album, and I was listening and thinking, oh that's me, oh that's exciting. You know, and then on Wednesday evening we sat down and we watched the film.
Yeah.
And my husband and I both had something in our eye.
Oh.
I was absolutely blown away by the beauty of that film. It's just extraordinary what they've created. You know, it's so moving. People throw around words like, you know, inspirational, and it become a bit of a cliche, but this really, really is. This is just such a tribute to the strength of the human spirit, and, you know, and just the work and the dedication and the talent of those athletes is just phenomenal. And I am utterly in love with Bebe, who is an Italian fencer who features on the film and whose scenes I'm singing on. She's so, her strength and her grace, but yeah, physically, mentally, spiritually, are just phenomenal. So I think everyone needs to watch it. It seems to me like the Paralympic spirit is something very, very special that I think we all need right now. And I think that it's exactly the same spirit, the same, the words they were saying, I heard those athletes saying, were just all the same reasons why I started Formidability. And there's so many parallels there. And I think the arts need to catch up with sport and catch up with the Paralympics in terms of seeing artists who happen to have a disability and, but more importantly, are just phenomenally gifted and hardworking. And yeah, their work needs to be seen on the same level as anybody else's.
Maybe this time, which we're in at the moment, is an opportunity for the arts to really sort of take a look at itself and, you know, so I suppose respect disabled artists and performers and workers and be more inclusive and you know, be a statement or a platform and a voice for disabled people, which sadly isn't perhaps as well seen on stage or in performance or behind the scenes. I think the, you know, the arts have got probably a lot to do, but yeah, no, definitely.
Absolutely, I agree. And I was really moved by Peter Etedris was talking on, one of the co-directors was talking on the BBC. There's a clip on the BBC website, and he was saying about they want people to be angry and upset when they watch this film. and yes, there are elements of it where you will feel like that. But there's all those elements you will feel the way I was describing about utterly inspired. But he was saying about, I think it was in that or was it, I read it. It was one of the, either in the interview or something I read, they went out of their way to use disabled people on the film, not beyond, as well as the athletes, but, you know, to find people who happen to have a disability, might not be so well known, but they've got something really great to give. And I think that's the case, and that, you know, me as a soprano, as a visually impaired soprano, there are other musicians there who are also disabled who were on the soundtrack, and I think, and so I'm just, wow. And of course, and the title song as well. I think, not sure. I think I read that the artists involved are disabled too.
Life is still very uncertain at the moment. You know, lockdown has started to ease a little bit. Theatres and venues are putting on shows, whether it's online or whether it's socially distanced at a venue, and there's a lot happening. What does the future look like for you, Formidability, disabled performers and audiences, as we take the next few steps into the next few months and into 2021?
I've been on numerous forums online on Zoom and this during this period, and I feel like there's a real appetite for coming out of this better than we went in terms of the arts and in terms of inclusivity and diversity. And I just really hope that we need to get people to listen, and the people in the boardrooms to really think about what they can be doing in their organization to make their work more inclusive for the professional artists that they're using, but also for their audiences as well. It's so important that it's not a sort of a two-tier reopening where the disabled people get left behind and, you know, only the people who feel safe to go out and don't have and aren't vulnerable and so on are included. So it's just got to be level. They've got to find ways to make this happen. And I think, yeah, I've been in some really interesting discussions, and there's the real feeling and what drive wanting change. So I hope we can be part of that as a company, and I hope as an individual I can be part of that. It certainly feels like it at the moment. there's that line, isn't there? And I forget which, is it from a film? You know, this too shall pass. But, you know, we will come out of this. Yeah. And also there's something Bebe says on Rising Phoenix, and she is the Rising Phoenix. It's her nickname, which is gorgeous. And she says, and I'm paraphrasing here, it's accept the situation you're in and then find the beauty in it. I thought that's really, really, well, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, Joanne, thank you very much indeed. It's been lovely chatting again, and I'm sure we'll be chatting again soon.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Toby.
Do visit the Tete a Tete website, tete-a-tete.org.uk, for full details on how to watch the streamed version of The Bridge Between Breaths and how you can take your part in helping to shape and support this Formidability R&D project. For more information about Formidability and their work to make opera accessible for everyone, do visit their website, formidability.org. To find out more about my portfolio services, including more examples of my radio and audio work, do visit my website, tobydavey.co.uk, where you'll find details on how to contact me and follow me on social media. Do all keep safe and well.